This is Jim Inkster, and our guest to begin the show today is Dr. Rainer Weiss. He's a professor emeritus at MIT. Previously, Professor Weiss served as an assistant physics professor at Tufts University and has been an adjunct professor at LSU since 2001. He is a winner of the 2017 Nobel Prize in Physics. It was awarded last week to three pioneers at the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory, which announced last year the world's first direct detection of gravitational waves. On September 14th of 2015, LIGO's observatories in Livingston Parish and in Hanford, Washington, detected tiny ripples in the fabric of space-time caused by the merger of two massive black holes about 1.3 billion years ago. And good morning to you, and congratulations, Dr. Rainer Weiss.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk with you, and you're an institution at MIT, a legend, and for good reason. But even though you've had all these accolades in your long career, there's nothing quite like the Nobel Prize, is there?
No, it's quite something. But, you know, I'm an old guy. I'm 85, so, you know, I've been hanging on for many, many years. So, okay.
Well, we'll talk about your backstory. This is a fascinating gentleman we're speaking with. But how did you end up at LSU?
Well, that's a very important story, and I'm glad you asked that question. It actually comes about because LSU, in a time when very, very few people in the world, none of the universities really in the United States, except a very few of them, were thinking about this field of gravitational wave physics and gravitational wave astronomy. And I think I don't know exactly the date it was, but in the mid-80s of the last century, they hired a guy named Warren Johnson. And then he hired a guy named William Hamilton. And they were people who were doing this kind of work at LSU with a different technique. I won't go into that. It was a great big bar and a big metal bar, aluminum bar. And they had one of the world's best bars sitting there right there in Baton Rouge. And they were trying very hard to see gravitational waves, and they set pretty good limits, but they didn't see any. But that's how it all started, and that has nothing to do with LIGO and me. They were there way before us. And then when LIGO became an idea that looked like it was looking for a place to be done, they made a big effort to try to get LIGO to come to Louisiana, and they succeeded. And they were the ones who discovered that site in Livingston, and they were strong advocates for the whole new technique. And they, in fact, William Hamilton really sort of retired, but Warren became part of the team that built up LIGO in Louisiana. And so it's a long history. It's way before LIGO, and I think the whole state ought to be thankful to them for bringing this thing to Louisiana, because it turned out to be moderately successful, otherwise I wouldn't be with you.
Well, this discovery, Dr. Weiss, it confirmed a major prediction of Albert Einstein's 1915 general theory of relativity. And does it open a new window into the cosmos?
Well, that's certainly what it did. And don't mind me if I correct you, but I'm a little bit of a pedant, okay? But there was actually hints of this before LIGO. I mean, pretty good hints. And that was done by people doing radio astronomy. And they had found a pair of stars, what called neutron stars. These are stars that are as heavy as our sun, but about the size of Baton Rouge. So, I mean, they're enormously dense. And a little teaspoon of it will weigh millions of tons. It's an amazing object. And they found two of these. And when they were very carefully mapping them with looking at the pulses that were coming from these two, from one of the stars, which happened to be a pulsar, they discovered in the process of trying to solve for the motions of these objects that they had to include gravitational waves as a way of understanding their motion. And so back in, I think, 2000, or in the 1900s, 1990s, they won the Nobel Prize for that system, and along with it, sort of the very first hint, what we'll call the indirect detection of gravitational waves. But the direct detection, which is what was done at Livingston and also in Washington, as you point out, is not just a confirmation of Einstein, but it's really a couple of other things. It attests to that, you know, you and I, people, can make a device that can measure these very, very delicate distortions of space and time. And then those measurements can be used, just as you indicate, to open a new field of astronomy, of a different kind entirely. than what we have opened with the kinds of things that telescopes see, the normal telescopes. That's called electromagnetic astronomy because it uses electromagnetic waves for you to communicate with that distant system. Here we're using something which is completely different. The electromagnetic waves come from a system of when a thing has charges in it, you know, charges, and those charges accelerate. That's the source of those waves. Whereas the things that we see are the source of those is accelerating mass, and that has a profound difference in terms of information you might get from a system that you know. I'll give you an example. For example, we couldn't see these black holes directly. They still can't see them. I wish they could. Optical telescopes have looked in the regions where we saw this, but they didn't see anything yet. Maybe eventually, if we pinpoint the place better, people will see exactly what's going on there. But the reason we saw them at all, or was able to observe them or measure signals from them, is because they were massive, and they radiated these gravitational waves. And this way of looking at something that you knew about, but you didn't know all about, is something called multi-messenger astronomy. In other words, that you have now a completely other way of looking at some things you know about. And one of the things that will be announced more on October 16th, I won't go into it here, but that's just to tease your listeners. Another thing is someday we hope to see what goes on deep inside of an explosion of a star called a supernova. And then we will really find out what goes on inside of it, because these gravitational waves, they don't give a damn about what they go through. They go right through everything. They go through all the matter between them. And a light doesn't do that. Light gets stopped by atoms and molecules that are in the way. Gravitational waves are just impervious to everything. They just move right through. So you can look deep into things you've never seen before. Or rather, you can see things which you've never seen before deep inside of things. On the other hand, what we're really hoping for, and that's sort of the deepest answer to your question, is the business of that now with a new window like this, and with a new way of looking at things, you might find things that nobody's ever seen by another method. And that's a great hope, and I fully expect it will happen.
What exactly happened on September 14th, 2015, that just came out of seemingly nowhere? Obviously, it was somewhere, but what happened on that day that was different than all the other days?
Well, what was different about it is that the instrument saw something, okay? We had been running. I mean, we've been in Louisiana since the end of the 90s building this instrument. And in fact, LSU and has been deep in all of these processes. We ran an initial instrument, which was not as sensitive as the one that made the discovery, but was a very important instrument to operate. We ran that in Louisiana and in Washington for something like 7 years, six years. And we saw what I would call a very good, clean nothing. In other words, sometimes when you see nothing, it's bad. But this time we saw nothing, but we understood why we saw nothing. We understood the instrument well enough. And we just could declare that we didn't see anything, and there were no gravitational waves stronger than a certain magnitude. And luckily, we had ideas, and the National Science Foundation, which is the organization that funded this, which is in Washington, and everybody has paid to have us do this, which is I'm very thankful for. Continued us by allowing us to put another instrument in the same envelope, a better instrument that was, which had more sensitivity. And with the changes that were made, almost very close to the beginning of trying to run with that instrument after it was installed, we saw this thing that now you described really in the beginning of the program. Namely, we saw something which people had thought about, which is that we knew about black holes. People had seen black holes in other settings. People doing X-ray astronomy had seen black holes. I won't go into how that happens unless you ask, but we knew that black holes existed, which was already a pretty important thing because Einstein didn't think they would exist. And many, many people, here at MIT, when I was a kid, didn't believe in them either because it's a very strange thing, phenomena. This things go crazy in the theory, it looks like.
Well, you brought it up. How did the conventional wisdom change on black holes?
Well, it did because people began to find these. That was the big thing. I think the thing that made the transition was indeed the X-ray astronomers. Now you're asking me. I might as well tell you. I mean, what happened is they began to see, there's another one of these wonderful examples of a new way of looking at the universe. This happened to be an electromagnetic way of looking at the universe. Instead of looking with your eyes, you looked with instruments, and you looked at X-rays that came out of some system. And they noticed that the X-rays came out of a system in many places in our own galaxy where they knew They could see with their optical telescopes, they could see one object. And they could, by looking at that object, they could see that it was moving around something else, but they couldn't see the thing it was moving around. And so they studied that, and they began to realize that the mass of that thing it was going around was bigger than anything they would have expected for a neutron star, which is these stars we talked a little about earlier. And so they said, look, we can't see the thing. It's that close to the ordinary star we know and love. It has to be a black hole. And they had a hell of a time convincing everybody about that. But eventually they won because it was the simplest explanation of that phenomenon. And so we knew that single black holes, and people had accepted that certainly by the time LIGO was being built. Most people, not everybody, but most people.
All right,
but
hold
the
tight.
New thing.
Hold tight. We do have to take a break, but we will return and spend another segment with Nobel Prize winner Dr. Rainer Weiss from MIT and LSU. We're back after this pause on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, and we're visiting with Nobel Prize winner Dr. Ray Weiss of MIT and LSU. He's been teaching at LSU since 2001, and this man is recognized around the world for his scientific success and has won, along with two others, the 2017 Nobel Prize, and it's all because of a project that is rooted deep in the heart of Livingston Parish, and you were on the ground floor. LSU, by the way, has many contributors to the LIGO Science Collaboration, and this is something that I don't think we've probably recognized as much as we should in our community. This is heady stuff around the world, and much of it is based right here in our backyard, Dr. Weiss.
Yeah, well, let me just encourage you to make it a little better known, because I'm going to give you some names of people that people ought to talk to who are right at LSU. In particular, there's really a world-class scientific research group at LSU now, operating and deeply involved with doing the data analysis and doing the operations of this project. I mean, in other words, they're there out there in Livingston every day helping make that apparatus run. And so the group that I'm talking about is Joe Giami, who runs that site. He's a professor at LSU. And Gabriela Gonzalez, who is also a professor in that group. And then a young professor named Thomas Corbett, who is working on new advanced ideas that might eventually be used in that device. And Jorge Pullen, who is a theorist, a famous theorist in gravity, who happens to be at LSU too. So you've got one of the most substantial groups in the country in this field. So you ought to be proud of it. And anyway, let me go back to what I was telling you earlier, namely about, you asked me what was so special about this event that was seen in 2015. And I was telling you about black holes a little. And let me just finish that thought. And what was new that came out of that discovery back in 2015, and what was new about it was not that black holes were never seen before. What was never seen before was two black holes together, that there were two black holes within reach of each other. That was new. We couldn't predict that. We didn't know that. In fact, in our early planning of LIGO, we were not sure we could ever detect black holes. Alone, it's kind of hard to do, but when they go around each other, they dance around each other, they're accelerating. That means that they radiate gravitational waves. And what we did indeed see is these two black holes, and they're big ones. They're 30 solar masses of sort of about each one. I mean, I'm approximating. And they go around each other, and they dance around each other, and then they get closer and closer and closer, and then they smash into each other. And all of this is registered in the gravitational waves, and when they smash into each other, they make a new black hole. That's not quite twice as heavy as the two black holes separately, because about something like 5% of the radiation, 5% of the energy gets radiated away. And that is so powerful. It was about the most powerful explosion in the universe. It lit up the universe in gravitational waves, much more powerful than all the light that the whole universe emits at any one moment. It really was quite a spectacular event.
I mentioned that this probably happened 1.3 billion years ago. How do we arrive at that figure?
Okay, well, that's thank you for that question. That's an interesting question and a good one. You arrive at that because there's a very good theory of gravity that was developed by Albert Einstein. We have calibrated our instruments. We know how sensitive they are. That's part of the task of running such a device. So we know exactly how much of a strength of gravitational wave pushes our masses around in that instrument that's out in Livingston. And knowing that, and knowing what, once having identified by the motions of that system what it is, knowing the masses of it, you can calculate what must be the distance to it, because Einstein's theory gives you the way of doing that. In other words, Einstein's theory says, it tells you how the signal or the gravitational waves will get smaller in the measurement. The strain measurement will get smaller as the wave progressed from that source to your detector. And so by knowing the masses from just the signals themselves, knowing our sensitivity of the detector, we have a pretty good idea using Einstein's theory, just plugging away, putting in numbers into it, where it is, the distance it's away. Now, we don't know it exactly. We have to make some models. But look, to what you're saying, sort of 1 billion light years away is a pretty good guess. And we'll, as we get more of these, we're finding, in fact, we've seen more of them. Many of them live out there, the ones that we're seeing.
Well, the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory in Livingston played a critical role in this discovery. And
central role. God damn it, say it right. It was absolutely not more than it. We couldn't have been done without it. You said critical. It's the right word. But, you know, we couldn't have done it without Louisiana. Come on.
Well, the odds of this happening would seem to be about as astronomical as the odds of a young man born in Berlin ending up in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and winning the Nobel Prize. You've got quite a story yourself, Dr. Rainer Weiss. How did all this happen for you?
Well, that's a very long story, and let's not make too much of it. I was always interested in science as a kid, and luckily I went to a good college, MIT, and I flunked out because I had a love affair. That's another problem. But and then what happened is I got a job with a guy who, and every one of us needs a guy like this. I worked with a guy named Gerald Zacharias, and I worked in his lab, and he hardly knew me when he hired me. In fact, his technicians hired me, and I stayed in his lab as a card-carrying union member for a while before I went back to school, and I worked with him, and the guy, we got to know each other very well, and that guy said, you know, you're not as stupid as you look, and he helped me out enormously. So that's the real basis of the whole story. Look, I want to tell you one other thing, which you haven't asked me, but I want, before this is over, to tell you something else that's at Livingston, which everybody ought to know about. Do you mind if I do that?
No, go ahead.
Okay. They have a really remarkable facility out there which has benefited your state, the whole state, and has really done some important, I think, I'm of all the things that LIGO has done, that's one of the most things that certainly I'm personally most proud of. Not that I didn't build it, but the idea was Barry Barish's idea and Michael Zucker's idea and a lot of other people at Southern University had part of this. And what it is, it's a remarkable science museum that's out there, but it's more than a museum. It's right on the site. It's open to people from the outside on special days. You have to just look on your website and find out when it's open. It's usually on a Saturday. And they do two functions. They, first of all, have a wonderful museum, a lot of elegant experiments which kids and even adults can run, maybe more likely the kids. Yeah, the adults are not as skilled as the kids often. And they show a lot of the things that are inside the apparatus. And you can play with things, and it gives you a better understanding of what's going on inside that facility that's right there. But the other function it has is it brings students there. People come in school buses from different schools all over Louisiana. It's not just Livingston Parish. And the kids, while the kids are playing with the instruments and the various things that are really fun to do, the teachers are learning all about this, and they take back to their school little samples of these things, and they can build them at their own schools. And so consequently, we're slowly but surely filling up Livingston Louisiana as best as we can with the ideas and the concepts that are associated with LIGO. And I think when I go there a lot. Lately, I've not been there that much because of all this hoopla, but I love to go in there secretly and watch what goes on. The kids are wonderful, and the teachers, as they learn, it just opens up much more than just the universe. It opens up real ideas into the way science is done. So I'm extremely pleased with that facility, and it ought to be more better known by everybody in the state.
Well, at 85, you have survived Nazi Germany. You've lived through some world conflicts, and you've been on the forefront of this for most of your career, if not all of it. Is this the culmination of your life's work?
Oh, my gosh. You make it sound so dramatic. Come on.
Well, it is.
Let me say it the way I like to, okay? And that'll end it. I'll tell you something. People make it sound like such an ordeal. You know, 40 years, you're doing all this. Oh, my God, never detecting gravitation. That was never the way we viewed it, all of us who worked on this. What it is, you work on something today, like a better circuit or a mechanical gizmo that you made that goes in it, and you get a lot of kick out of what you did. If it doesn't work, you fix it the next day, and you keep at it. And the thing is, every day, is if it isn't fun, you won't do it. And the other part of it is, that we were very lucky in this project to have people, we all liked each other. So it was a pleasure to work with the people all over the project, Caltech, MIT, and both at both sites, Livingston and Washington, we have a team of people who are just wonderful to work with. So then every once in a while, yeah, maybe you saw something, and that gets the excitement. But that's not the reason we all did it, and we stayed with it. So don't. I know what you're saying. This is a wonderful end for it. It's maybe the beginning of a new field, which is even better. But the real thing is I wouldn't have done anything else in my life. Understand? I hope you understand that.
Yeah. Well, it's been quite a voyage for you, and it continues.
Yeah.
I'd say.
Yeah, it does. You're right.
I'm being energized by your enthusiasm. You definitely love what you do.
Well, thank you.
Dr. Weiss, thank you. And thank you for coming to LSU. This is quite an honor not only for MIT, but for Louisiana State University, and I appreciate the credit you've given to my alma mater.
You went there. Good for you. Okay. It's a great place. The music school is terrific, too, by the way.
It is indeed.
All right.
Thank you, Dr. Ray Weiss.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Okay,
now the news on 89.3 WRKF.
Louisiana Radio Network.
This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. 877-217-5757. Quite an honor and pleasure to talk with Dr. Rainer Weiss, a 2017 Nobel Prize winner for physics, along with two others, for their work with the Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory in Livingston Parish. And we're joined now by Dr. Joseph Giami, who runs the observatory. And he is a protege of the previous guest, Dr. Weiss. You've known this gentleman a long time, haven't you, Joseph?
Yeah, that's right. In fall 1986, I was finishing up a bachelor's degree at MIT. Didn't quite know what would come next, and so had a chance to be connected with Ray Weiss. Everybody calls him Ray, all of his
right.
group members and so on. And worked for him as a technician for a time, and then the following year joined him as a grad student, a PhD student, with him as the advisor.
Well, he is a legend, and what he's done is remarkable, but he was quick to mention that he could not have accomplished this without a lot of help here in Louisiana.
Yeah, he's always taken, it always seemed to me, he's taken a special interest in the Louisiana site. So LIGO has two observatories, one in eastern Washington State and one here, and he sent one of his best students here to work with us for several years. That fellow, Rana Adhikari, is now a Caltech professor, and Ray himself spent many time here, as much as he could get away with, you know, with his family obligations. And much of that time he was emeritus. He had formally retired from MIT, but he took the emeritus designation as a license to just work harder without having any administrative responsibilities.
We're going to go to the phone lines in just a moment, 877-217-5757, 297-5633 in Baton Rouge. You can send an email as well, talk@talklouisiana.org. But this is an amazing accomplishment. And we've talked before, but we were talking about something that took years and years and patience and fortitude and money. And LSU stayed the course.
Yeah, it turns out that when the time came to find a site to build the LIGO observatories, LSU and Livingston Economic Development Council and State Economic Development kind of joined forces and put in one of the siting proposals, and it turned out to be selected along with the site in eastern Washington, and as part of that deal, LSU promised to acquire the land, which they did, build a road, hire two assistant professors. So I was one of those assistant professors that came here in 1999. So it's all been a great deal as far as I'm concerned, and it cost the state something like $750,000.
That's all.
In to acquire the land and build the road, and so that's the actual cash outlays. So I think it was a fine investment.
Federal money was involved as well.
So the federal government, the National Science Foundation, over the entire course of the LIGO enterprise, that goes back, you know, into the early 80s when the first research and development was funded at MIT and Caltech and other places, they've spent more than $1 billion up to the point where the discovery was made in late 2015, which is a lot of money. It was spread over decades, and it represented exactly the sort of thing the National Science Foundation does best, really, really high payoff, high risk endeavors where you can't tell necessarily tell, for example, a member of Congress when the win is going to come.
Yeah, but the win came in 2015 on a September day, and we talked with Dr. Weiss about this. A day like any other, except for, boom, there it is. How did you find out?
Yeah, so it happened pretty early in the morning. So I'd like to say I was right there and I noticed it, but I was blissfully asleep. We basically have computer algorithms to find stuff like this and alert us to what we call triggers. And a trigger is kind of a neutral way of saying, mm-hmm. maybe there's something here. One of the strongest reasons we have two observatories is if you see the same signal at both places and very, very close to each other in time, we can statistically rule out randomness very easily. And so later that day, we kind of figured something was up. And the only thing that we needed to rule out really was that it wasn't a test injection of some kind, and that happened pretty quickly. And then we had an enormous, 2-yard-long checklist of things to go through, and that took weeks and weeks of work at that time. And so basically it sunk in over the course of a couple of days, and then it was all settled in our heads over the course of several weeks.
877-217-5757 for Dr. Joseph Giami. He runs the LIGO Observatory, and that observatory is why our previous guest, Dr. Ray Weiss, has been awarded the 2017 Nobel Prize for Physics. Michelle and Lafayette, good afternoon, or good morning, Michelle. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hi, Jim. Love your show. I just wanted to also commend LIGO in the tour and the museum aspect. My previous career was a NASA engineer at Johnson Space Center, and my current career is homeschooling mom. And they have done a top-notch job in turning something very complicated into something that these kids can understand. And the excitement of the tour guides, it's similar to Dr. Wise's, and I so appreciate that, so that the kids can get excited too, because when you go through the state with different tours, at some point you see people that are like, oh my gosh, all these kids are coming in, what are they going to do to our museum? And it was so not like this at LIGO. They were so excited to get the children into what they were doing, and I truly appreciate that. And everyone, I know the teachers aren't listening because they're in school, but everyone should try to get their children to that tour.
Thank you, Michelle. And certainly nice and pertinent words from Michelle and Lafayette. Tours, are they available for the general public?
Yeah, so most of what we do is school groups, as the caller mentioned. And I'm so very, very grateful for your comments, by the way. We work pretty hard at that. We actually have three full-time employees who do education and public outreach, which is a rare and wonderful thing to have, funded by the National Science Foundation. Yeah, the third Saturday of every month, 1 to 5, we're open to the public and families, and we call it our Saturday Science Day, and we put on a good show. We have scientists there and our educational staff, and we have tours and movies and sort of the star attraction is an exhibit hall with 50 hands-on exhibits of the style. It's called inquiry-based learning, where you literally play with a physical object or physical setup and learn physical phenomenon rather than reading in a book or looking at a computer simulation. So we think that's the way of the future, and actually it's become part of the new science curriculum, that approach.
Still time to talk with Dr. Joseph Giami. He runs the LIGO Observatory, which is the focus of the 2017 Nobel Prize for Physics. 877-217-5757. Edward in South Downs, or Edward at LSU, Edward Ashworth. Hi, Eddie Ashworth. You're on with Joe Giami.
Hey, Jim Easter. How are you today?
Fine.
I wanted to just make sure that we remember Congressman Jim Baker's tireless efforts on behalf of the LIGO. Congressman Richard Baker, that's correct. And he was tireless in supporting that effort and making sure the federal funding continued to flow in that. And I think he should share in some of this.
Yes, he should. He did an exemplary job, a man who was representing Baton Rouge and the area where the observatory is for 22 years. And it could not have been done, is noted, without the $1 billion in federal assistance.
Yeah, he was a great supporter, and I mean this in the best possible way. He took it personally when the site was chosen. One of the sites was chosen as Louisiana. He was a very, very happy man, and not just because, you know, he was delivering something to his constituents, but because he really wanted it to make it work and bring it here. And he came and gave a wonderful speech when we had our kind of opening ceremony 15 years ago, and everybody still remembers the Boudreaux Thibodeau joke he told.
Well, I imagine our U.S. senators at that time had a say in it as well.
Yeah, indeed. Although, from my point of view, as sort of a lowly assistant professor, I wasn't exposed to that so much as Congressman Baker's efforts and his staff took a personal interest in it.
He did, and hats off to Congressman Baker, who now runs the National Hedge Fund Association. He's done very well since he left Congress, but he left a mark, and this is one that is potentially one for the ages.
Yeah.
I mean, this is significant, and for it to be in our backyard, as I'm stating, it's remarkable how little attention it has received compared to the magnitude of the find.
Well, we got so the Saturday Science immediately after the discovery in 2015. Remember, this is in a pretty hard to get to spot in Livingston Parish. You don't accidentally stumble across it. We had 1,300 visitors that day, crawling all over our exhibit hall.
Probably from all over the world.
They were lined up. We had to make rope lines for the tours. It was spectacular. People drove in from New Orleans, which doesn't happen much in Livingston Parish. And I mean that in a nice way.
You spend a lot of time there, though, don't you?
I do. I spend time. You know, I live in Baton Rouge with my wife, and she works at LSU as well. And I go every day to Livingston to run the observatory.
But you were at LSU for 16 years before this happened, and I'm sure we all have doubt. Sure at some point you thought it may happen, but it's probably not going to happen on my watch.
Indeed, and I think that we were, like many experimentalists, you know, we try to measure, you plan an experiment or an observatory to measure something that's been predicted by theorists, and knowing that it takes years, decades to do these experiments, but the theorists can change their minds in an hour to hour. So it's a little bit of a game we play with each other, the theorists and the experimentalists. And they did change their mind a number of times during those intervening decades about how, not about whether gravitational waves existed, but about how many we would see and how often they would come. And so that number went up and down.
877-217-5757 is your number. Our guest for the remainder of the hour is Dr. Joseph Giammi. He runs the LIGO Observatory in Livingston Parish, and we're back after this two-minute pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar producing. Your number is 877-217-5757. You can email us at talk@talklouisiana.org, and we do have some emails we will get to for Dr. Joseph Giammi. He runs the LIGO Observatory, which is the focus of the Nobel Prize of 2017. It is the place where the first direct detection of gravitational waves occurred, and it happened on September 14th of 2015. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, please be brief. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Congratulations. This is just incredible. And what I'd ask you is, how this affects the study of quantum physics. I mean, what does a layman do to, like, do my research on what, you know, what this is going to mean, you know, what, and to understand just exactly what we did find out. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil.
Well, the interesting thing about gravitational waves is that at least the first few sources we saw, black holes colliding, you can't see that stuff any other way. You can only observe it, the actual coalescence, via gravity. We're not aware of any quantum phenomena that are exposed by that, though, you know, we hope to keep studying this and with better sensitivity, perhaps learn more about the black hole after the larger black hole after it's formed. And really, as an experimentalist, the thing that brings us the greatest joy is to measure things that don't agree with current theory. So far, we have not had that joy.
Okay. 877-217-5757. If you'd like to talk to Dr. Giami, and if you'd like to send an email, talk@talklouisiana.org. Marie in Baton Rouge asks, how does the magnitude of gravity waves vary with distance?
So if you go twice as far away from the source, the gravitational wave as we measure it is half as large, not a quarter, as you might expect.
Okay, Nicholas on Nicholson says, how do you as a scientist equate science with religion?
Well, I don't equate science with religion. We try to play by the rules. Most scientists, when we talk to each other and write things up and think things through scientifically, we play by the rules of science, which is you make observations, you try to predict things, you try to make predictions that are measurable, falsifiable, and so on. That's the shortest answer
but
I can give.
But I'm sure you realize that some people will take offense when the science shows that this is a 1.3 billion year episode. Some people would not accept that.
Yeah, occasionally it comes up with tour groups, and you know, we try to basically tell them we have a certain approach and a certain approach to finding facts, and we kind of stick to it and honor it.
Okay, I've got some emails. One from Stephen: I'm amazed and happy to hear what this guest has to say about the cosmos and LSU. Here's another one saying, what if our state and local leaders were as excited about LSU as this guy?
They kind of are. I mean, the governor invited Gabriela Gonzalez and myself, another professor at LSU who was the spokesperson for the collaboration at the time of the detection, to the opening session of that legislative session.
Dr. Weiss noted that he did get a call from Governor John Bel Edwards congratulating him, and he was very appreciative of that. You know, here's a guy who's like, I mean, he's the big guy in physics in the world, 85 years old, and he gets a big kick out of the governor of Louisiana calling him.
Yeah, I think science, at the federal level anyway, the science has always been a very bipartisan thing. It doesn't change much, especially things like hard physical science. It doesn't change very much with which party is in charge. I'm grateful for that.
All right. Another listener asked for you to repeat information about possible tours.
Yeah, so for the general public, you show up in the afternoon, the third Saturday of every month, and you don't need to sign up in advance or anything. If you have a school group or a civic group that you want to that you're interested in, go to www.ligo-la.caltech.edu, and there'll be links there for educational public outreach for the Science Education Center, and they will get you to a sign-on, a place where you can inquire about those things.
And this is every Saturday, 1 p.m., correct?
Yeah. Occasionally we extend it if there's something big happening, but it's one is you can count on mm-hmm. that. Yeah.
Well, in any measurement of physics departments in the world, MIT is going to be number one, your alma mater. You got your PhD. LSU is probably not anywhere close to that. But this truly was a collaboration between little LSU and big MIT. How did that happen?
Yeah, well, one of the reasons it happened is that because this field of study didn't have any data or any triumphs for decades. It was something that there were a lot of players from state universities. There still are. Small schools are part of our collaboration. Gabriela Gonzalez is a superb physicist, and she was elected the spokesperson of the collaboration. At the time of the discovery. I came down here.
She wore her LSU pin, I remember that.
Yeah, she
that.
Wore a very bright, sparkly LSU pin to the press conference that her husband gave her, and who's also an LSU professor. So we actually have a great department, and with a lot of astronomy and astrophysics, and not just gravity.
Janet in New Roads. Janet, you're on Talk Louisiana with Dr. Joe Giami. Hi, Janet.
Hi, Jim. I just wanted to say I was at LSU in 1975 and 76. When the gravity wave experiment was actually going on, and there was an undergrad student named Brett Stewart who had taken a Digital Equipment Corporation computer, basically a business computer, and rebuilt the computer, rewrote the software, and wrote the algorithms that were actually doing the measurements of what that gravity bar was doing. And he was an undergrad student, left LSU in 1976, and went to Arizona State University. So a lot of that early computing that was done, I think that then the building on afterwards built onto the work that Brett Stewart had originally done.
Yeah, thank you for that. I've never met him, but I should say that Professor Bill Hamilton, who was here when I got here, he founded that group in 1970, coming here from Stanford, and he and Warren Johnson and others built and operated that bar for many years. And it ran together with LIGO Livingston for an important run a number of years ago to study what would happen when whether there were phenomena that could be observed that way. And were it not for that effort, were it not for Bill's effort and the effort of the other bar antenna people, our field probably wouldn't have come about.
There will be another announcement coming Monday, and this is a tight lips thing. Dr. Weiss wouldn't tell me what it was, and Dr. Giammi says he can't tell me either, but I understand this is going to be quite significant.
Yeah, like I said, we're not talking about that today, but I would be happy to talk another time.
Yeah, well, maybe next week.
Yeah, that's right.
But this is something that's evolving, and this is a huge step, and it happened in our backyard, and I would imagine because of that, there's more to come.
Yeah, there's a number of reasons to expect more to come. One is we had a press conference a couple of weeks ago. The two LIGO observatories were joined by one in Italy, which is a French, mostly French-Italian collaboration called Virgo, and it allowed us to find one of those black hole coalescences on the sky more accurately than ever before. With three, it's like having 3 years. My staff in Livingston is working quite hard now, making improvements on the detector to make it more sensitive. Ditto for the detector in Hanford. And so we're just expecting more and more things to be visible to us as the years go by.
Well, when you graduated with your PhD from MIT in 1995, my guess, Dr. Giammi, you had no idea you were going to end up spending your career in Louisiana.
Yeah. So in practice, you know, when you get your PhD, you're looking for a job somewhere, and academia is strange that way, right? You never know where professorships are going to open up, and so on. So, on the other hand, the opportunity to have a teaching position right next to an observatory is really tough to pass up, and I was very pleased to get the job here.
And this is one of those good stories amid all the budget cuts to higher education, particularly in Louisiana, which has been hit harder than any other state. And some other states have been hit hard too, but Louisiana in particular. This is one of those stories that makes us feel good about humanity.
It does indeed. And if you were to ask Ray Weiss that question, you probably would have had to bleep out his answer, because he feels very, very strongly about those things. Of course, as do I. It does bring hope that there are people and taxpayers who are willing and able to fund things that take decades that are important.
And this is the potential start of something big. It took a long time, about 1.3 billion years, but now, based on the fact that you've had this find, you can build upon that.
That's right. So our first paper, we made a number of measurements that people weren't, including me, weren't expecting us to be able to make so quickly. And when we operate, when we see things and we generate those triggers, people slew telescopes and look as well. So we've really joined the astronomy community in that regard. So we'll see what happens. And I the future is definitely bright.
Well, thank you, Dr. Joseph Giammi, and congratulations. And this is a story that will continue, and we'll be calling on you again, perhaps very soon. And we'll see you. See you later.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. For Ali Baltazar, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening to Talk Louisiana, and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.